5-year prison sentence and a maximum death sentence. He explained how he was detained and treated in the Israeli captivity.
On the afternoon of October the 8th, just days after my report on the Iranian missile strike was published, I was stopped outside a military checkpoint near Nablus in the northern West Bank. They tightly wrapped a cloth around my head as a blindfold, shackled my legs, handcuffed my wrists, and walked me into the back of a military truck. In custody, I was treated not like a journalist but as an enemy, a distinction that, for Israel, seemed irrelevant. I was held in solitary confinement, deprived of adequate food and water.
In Lofredo's idea, the courage threshold for investigative journalists in the occupied Palestinian territories has risen to an extreme level, and reporting truth means being willing to risk imprisonment or death. However, Lofredo says restrictions have proven ineffective in containing certain information, as Israelis can still access foreign publications. He says Israel has escalated its high-handed tactics, relying on threats of violence, incarceration, and even death to maintain its censorship regime. On October 20th, Lofredo, after spending days in solitary confinement, was informally deported to the U.S. Formal deportation would have required convicting him on terror charges. The journalist's case is still open in what it seems as a deterrent to ensure if he returned, Lofredo would face detention again. But Lofredo says he will continue reporting on Palestine from outside the occupied territories.
South Africa's own experience in confronting a violent oppressor shows that the people are the backbone of any resistance. Veteran anti-apartheid military commander and former intelligence minister Ronnie Castrels says he personally communicated this message to Palestinian resistance leaders in Syria and the Gaza Strip. Commemorating the martyrdom of Hamas resistance movement leaders Ismail Haniyeh and Yahya Sinwar and Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, Castrels and other figures reflected on the way forward to hold Israel to account.
The people in struggle is your power. The armed struggle reinforces the overall struggle. The underground network assists the resistance. We've seen this. And then number 4 is international solidarity. Very powerful.
So despite the assassination of senior leaders of the resistance, which was also witnessed during the South African freedom struggle, where exiled activists were assassinated through letter bombs, the resistance will go on.
Martyrdom in itself and the loss of our leaders, it's plays such a pivotal role. So even if you're a person of no faith, but when your leader is killed in a most brutal fashion, assassinated, you actually take courage from that, and in fact, it speeds the downfall of the tyrant.
While South Africa has been commended for charging Israel with genocide at the International Court of Justice, people have urged it to take more decisive actions, such as through sanctions. Those who masterminded South Africa's struggle against apartheid say the government has so far failed to properly address the issue.
When South Africa takes action, the world really takes note, and the moral voice and strength of South Africa.
Despite the political maneuvers on the front lines, the message hasn't changed. Recent weeks have witnessed a surge of intense and deadly anti-Israeli operations, proving that the assassination of top leaders such as Said Hassan Nasrallah, Yahya Sinwar and Ismail Haniyeh will not diminish the strength of the resistance. Rather, these Israeli crimes will only intensify the determination of the resistance to deal even heavier blows on the occupying regime. Hassan Siriab, Cape Town.
Immigration is a top issue in next week's election in the United States, as the Border Patrol has documented nearly 11 million encounters during the administration of Joe Biden, as compared with just over 3 million during the era of Donald Trump. That's caused major changes and even crises in many small towns and big cities in the U.S., and a worsening of the refugee crisis in Latin America. The 7 Latin American countries which have lost the greatest percentage of their population to the U.S., Nicaragua, Cuba, Honduras, Haiti, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Venezuela, have all been recent victims of American-led coups and sanctions.
I mean, the main thing I always say about Latin America, about the Middle East, about all these areas, if you don't want refugees coming into your nation, don't destabilize these nations. Don't go around bombing these nations. Don't go around supporting fascist leaders in these nations or leaders that don't listen to the people.
What's more, the Biden administration has expanded welcome efforts targeting immigrants from leftist-inspired countries like Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba.
Cubans they can just put one foot in the United States and they're automatically Americans. They get all kinds of benefits. They get housing and things. They get shipped to South Florida. They want to create turmoil in Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua. They want to have it as difficult as people can to survive. I mean, why can't Cubans send money, remittances back to Cuba? That's just inhuman.
The recent increase follows basic capitalist economics. In a period of record price increases, a mass influx of workers representing new labor competition will cause the existing workforce to reduce their demands for higher wages to keep up with the price increases. Promoting a key plank of fascist ideology, Trump has promised the largest mass deportation scheme in U.S. history, even as it seems like empty campaign bluster.
Mass deportation would encounter bureaucratic opposition at every level of government and massive resistance at the street level. The army is legally barred from participating in domestic law enforcement, and even a Republican sweep of Congress might have trouble in changing that 150-year-old law.
I think it would be horrible, and I think that it wouldn't be just undocumented immigrants who would be deported. I think that a lot of brown-skinned people would be swept up, and I think it would create a real racist hysteria in the country. Hopefully, other people would rise up and protest and help defend them, because it would be just a real travesty.
From the number of new courts to the number of new lawyers to the number of new police dedicated to immigration, deporting even a million undocumented immigrants a year would require an unprecedented financial and bureaucratic expansion of the state, which is something the typical Republican totally opposes. Rami Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
The Yemeni army has escalated its military actions against the Israeli regime, hitting targets from both land and sea. In recent operations, three Israeli-linked ships attempting to cross the strategic Bab el-Mandeb Strait were attacked at sea by various Yemeni armament. Less than 16 hours later, Yemeni armed forces launched three drones striking targets in the industrial zone of Ashkelon in southern occupied Palestine.
No doubt the continuous military operations against Israel at sea and the missile attack inside Israel are an indication we are in a critical phase where the army is trying to side and is starving the people in Gaza.
These recent attacks come as Israel suffers heavy losses in southern Lebanon and Gaza at the hands of resistance fighters. To add to the resistance military power, Yemen's navy also unveiled a new torpedo designed to devastate Israeli ships. The torpedo is engineered to deliver devastating damage to the lower hull of vessels, posing a serious threat to Israel's maritime assets.
The torpedoes are a more powerful weapon, which means any vessel hit by these torpedoes will surely sink. This is indeed a show of strength. It is also an indication of our naval military advancement that is ready to discipline the U.S. or any nation attempting to violate the Yemeni sovereignty.
Although Yemen's geographic location prevents its forces from directly engaging Israel, the Yemeni army has strategically leveraged its position to weaken Israel militarily and economically from afar.
The Yemeni army has stepped up its attacks against Israeli targets by launching more missiles and drones. These military operations are taking a toll against the Israeli regime and its economy as they call on the U.S. to help address those losses. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
The Islamic Movement and Jordanian activists organize a pro-Palestinian march under the banner Save Resilient Jabalia in Amman. They expressed a strong support for Palestinians in northern Gaza. particularly in Jabalia. Participants condemned the severe humanitarian conditions there, citing continuous attacks, starvation tactics, and a total blockade on food and medical supplies.
Mass atrocities continue in Jabalia for the 24th consecutive day. The occupying forces appear intent on forced displacement, which, if unchallenged, could also include Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. We must firmly reject all forms of forced displacement.
We gather here today to support Gaza, acknowledging that no action we take, whether now, in the future, or even in the past, can be compared to the sacrifices made by the Palestinians there. We hope for a swift end to the war. May God have mercy on all the martyrs.
Participants criticize the international community's inaction in the face of Israeli crimes, expressing solidarity with displaced people in Jabalia refugee camp, who are now under siege. They also reaffirm their commitment to supporting the resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Today we stand together to boost the spirit of our brothers in Gaza, who are making sacrifices for a noble cause. I want to emphasize that even if the leaders of the resistance are martyred, many will rise to take their place.
We are here to support our brothers in Jabalia, Gaza, and Palestine as they resist the aggressors. We ask God to grant them strength and success in their struggle.
Israel continues to displace Palestinians amid its ongoing military campaign in northern Gaza, applying deadly measures against approximately 400,000 individuals in the region, while enforcing a strict blockade that prevents the entry of food and medical supplies.
The Islamic movement in Jordan has called for the complete lifting of the Israeli blockade on the Gaza Strip and demanded Amman sever its ties with the Tel Aviv regime. Zaid Agarbe, Amman.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willest, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. We delve into the powerful statements of Sheikh Naim Qassem, Hezbollah's newly appointed leader, who asserts a commitment to disrupt Israel's so-called schemes in the region. In his first speech since taking office, he emphasized a critical need to support Gaza and confront 75 years of conflict, urging unity against perceived aggression. In this edition, we have a robust debate on these pressing issues as we are joined by Mr. Ali Hami, academic and political analyst, joining us live from Beirut. And Isabella Zeidan, academic and political analyst from Damascus.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you very much to both of you. Let's begin with our guest from Beirut, Mr. Ali Hami. What are your thoughts on Sheikh Qasem's commitment to disrupting Israeli schemes?
After greetings for you and to your guests and for all the audience, I would like to start saying that Sheikh Naim Qasem, the new Secretary General of Hezbollah, is starting his way by putting some regulations and points for the futures and inherited from, as he said, from the late leader, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and that we are continuing the same path as founded by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and Imam Khomeini and Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And he described that Iran is helping us. Not Iran is putting any influence in the region. Iran, because it saw that we are in need for some support to defend ourselves. So Iran came in 82 and helped us. This is one of the major things. And then he tried to clarify that we are at the same way. We are still strong enough to defeat Israel in the south, trying to for some incursion inside Lebanon or infiltration. So we're still strong. We restored all our empty spaces, leaders, power, missiles, anti-aircrafts, anti-seals, and all of our power are in a good shape right now. And if you, Netanyahu, wants to come more and more ancient inside South Lebanon, it will be like more killing for your soldiers. And in another hand, he said, and this is the most important point, he said that we tried to kill you in Kaisariya about 2 weeks ago, and we're still trying. But let me tell you this, Netanyahu, that somebody from your own within near you will kill you from inside Israel.
That is interesting. And let's bring in Isabella Zaidan with many thanks to Mr. Ali Hamia. I have to apologize for mispronouncing your name also, Mr. Hamia. Now, Isabella, how significant was the part where the new leader of Hezbollah emphasized that Hezbollah is not fighting on behalf of any country, but defending Lebanon's territorial integrity? And why do you think at this point in time this was so important to mention?
First of all, I would like to congratulate the Hezbollah members, all of Hezbollah members, for their resilience and continuous resistance against the fascist atrocities committed by the Israeli entities. Second of all, of course, it is important to reiterate that Hezbollah is only fighting for the sovereignty and the independence of Lebanon, especially while yesterday, there was an American ambassador in Lebanon that is provoking a civil war inside of Lebanon by telling the people to go against their fellow Lebanese, to stand by the side of the Israelis. And this is one. So, I mean, why we have an American ambassador that accused Iran of interfering into the internal affairs of Lebanon, we have a true resistance, a true heroes that would only stand for Lebanon. They are not waiting for any country to stand by their side. Of course, Iran has its role in Lebanon as a supporter of the resistance, nothing more. Of course, Hezbollah would still be a part of the resistance in the region, whether their fellow resistance in Iraq and in Yemen, but Hezbollah here is not fighting for any other country. It's not like trying to fight for any other country's interest. It's only for the interest in Lebanon. And we can see that very clear when we see that the Lebanese themselves, all of the Lebanese factions, all their fellow Lebanese, standing by their side, feeling their own wounds, feeling and try to be as compassionate and stand by the side of their fellow Lebanese as much as they could, because this is the only way a country could get its own sovereignty, its own independence against such a heinous criminal regime that would never leave no one alive, not a child, not a woman, not a man, and not even civilian buildings, including hospitals and churches and mosques.
Interesting that you should mention churches and mosques. We've also received a report from our correspondent from the city of Baalbek, and the fact that Israel is even targeting UNESCO heritage sites, sites that are deemed to be protected as a heritage of humanity and mankind. So, Mr. Hamia, why do you think Israel is damaging those buildings that are of great cultural significance?
Well, Israel is trying not only to have ethnic cleansing in Gaza and Lebanon, it's like more than genocides, crimes. But they are trying to make also to clear the history from the area, just to say that the Israelis were here first. And this is not true. As we see that Israel tried to strike against the entire ancient archaeological castle, which is like from Phoenician and Roman and Persian era. And now they try also to destroy around, you know, they try to hit around the Baalbek ancient archaeological castle heritage to manage to let it shake. So, and we know that this very ancient stones built together from one bomb to another bomb, we are talking about vibrating bombs that it goes deep into earth to make like such kind of earthquake. So they are trying to manage and to hit against Lebanon for ethnic cleansing, archaeological history cleansing, and they are trying to destroy infrastructures such as churches, mosques, hospitals, schools, universities, and even, you know, they're trying, they are after, as we see, as we saw in what's going on in the hospital, Adwan Hospital in Gaza, they captured the medicine and medical and doctors, they captured all of them and take them, and they seized all the instruments. So this enemy is going after the humanity, and period. They are not against like soldiers against soldiers, but it's like against humanity. They are trying to destroy and to make the Palestinian vanish from Palestine, and they're trying to make the Lebanese vanish from Lebanon in order for them to make some new settlements. And I don't think they will succeed in this. We see that most of the soldiers are being killed in South Lebanon. Tanks are attacked. PCV are defeated. And we are also that military factories are hit in within the 3-4 days ago. We are talking about Yodivat, we are talking about Tas, we are talking about Ata, we are talking about big Rafael, we are talking about big factories. So they will have no reputation, good reputation after this war.
Thank you very much. So Isabella, how significant do you think was the emphasis on supporting Gaza in Qassem's speech?
It's really important because this would show how strong the Hezbollah state is, that Hezbollah is still strong. The resistance is stronger more than ever. And this can be seen when Sheikh Naim al-Qasim talked about that we can survive, we can resist not only for days, not only for weeks, but for months and months are yet to come. and I'm not going to say more. And this is when he said, I'm not going to say more that month to come. He said, because he meant that the Israelis themselves, they won't survive, because they know exactly that Gaza is not the southern of Lebanon. As much as we are aching and we are in pain looking at the atrocities that Gaza is going through, but it's different from the southern of Lebanon. First, Gaza is, for Israel, for the Israeli regime, Gaza is considered as an entity, as an internal affairs matter, that this is why they are doing whatever they feel, because they have the green light from the superpowers who are backing them. They are going free, killing people, murdering children, and destroying infrastructure as much as they could, because they are, as your distinguished guest mentioned, they are trying to apply their policy of ethnic cleansing. But when it comes to the southern of Lebanon, it's different. It's first of all, it's not considered according to them. It's not considered part of the internal affairs of Israel. They are causing a diplomatic international problems by attacking a neighboring country. Of course, we don't consider Israel as a country; it's an entity. And second of all, they can never survive with the potentials that Hezbollah has. They are not waging a regular war against southern Lebanon. It's nothing but classic war. It's nothing close to classic war. The members, the heroes, the guys in the Hezbollah, they are using a war mechanism that has never been used before. No one, and we don't want to mention that no one would ever win a war from the sky. You can never. You can send rocket as much as you want. You can bomb building. You can keep sending death from far above, but you can never win the war. You can never win the battle until you put boots on the ground. And this is something Israel, up till now, has never shown the capability of doing so. They are so afraid of entering a couple of kilometers into the Lebanese land. They can't do it. They couldn't survive it. And we have seen they are themselves, we have seen the Israeli regime are confessing that they are losing soldiers. This is first. We see radicalists like Smotrich and Pingefir, they are talking about that they shouldn't, Gallant himself said that we cannot take whatever we want by power. If we go back in time also, this is not something new. In June, Gallant himself said that the concept of victory in the problem of Gaza and southern of Lebanon is something that comes, is something like imagination that will never come to happen. And when we see these things, we know that Mr. Sheikh Naim al-Qasim, when he mentioned that we will keep supporting Gaza because they know that Hezbollah has kept his potential are never, although they suffered a lot of tragic losses concerning the loss of the icon, Mr. Hassan Nasrallah, and the previous secretary, Mr. Safiyuddin, but when it comes to potentials, when it comes to military capabilities, when it comes to the war mechanism that no one else, I think, in the world owns it, like Hezbollah owns it, well, it's different. Hezbollah is even stronger. And when it comes to the loss, Mr. Sheikh Naim al-Qasim mentioned something about the loss of the death toll that the Hezbollah, the martyrdom, that Hezbollah is suffering them. But if we go ritually, if we study the resistance powers, the resistance group, ritually speaking, for them, this is a start. For them, death for the end of liberal of lands, for the end of, for the sake of land liberation, for the sake of integrity, for the sake of independence and sovereignty, this is for them is more than like a new start for a new life. So for them, death is not. It's something is the, let's say, martyrdom is the destiny that they are waiting for. And this is something I think the radicalists in the Israeli regime, major hegemonic powers, this is a fact that they are missing. They think that by killing people and destroying infrastructure, this would weaken the desire or the will of the people to stay in their land and defend their land. And this is wrong. They have to go. I mean, it's really important to go through the ritual and the religious part of these groups, because for them, death for the sake of liberating one's own land is not an end. It's a start. For them, it's a victory. It's a destiny they are waiting for, they are hoping for the sake of liberating their land. Of course, they want peace, but these are resistance powers that know that peace can never be achieved when the land is not liberated.
Thank you very much, Isabella. Now, back to Mr. Hamia. In your opinion, what are the key challenges that Naim Qassem will be facing as he leads Hezbollah moving forward?
Let me see the Hezbollah chain integrated so strongly today by declaring the new Secretary General, and all the chain are restored. In the other side, we can see that there is Israel is not convincing anymore, even to its allies. There is no confidence in their infantry and mechanized divisions on land. We know that there is five divisions now against Hezbollah north of Palestine, south of Lebanon. We are talking about Division 210, 98, 91, 36, 146. And we are talking about more than 85,000 Israeli soldiers that are trying to attack Lebanon. And we see a massive losses in the Israeli soldiers in South Lebanon. We are talking about the border villages. We are not talking about South Lebanon. And they never, ever could control any meter that they entered. But they enter in the daylight for a few meters. They withdraw and retreat at night. So it means there is no confidence in the infantry to achieve any victory. Even if you have so much strikes against Lebanon, destroying massive assassinations, killing air raids against Lebanon, against Palestine, but you will never achieve any victory by air raids and strikes. The real victory is when your soldier can move forward into the enemy line. And up to now, the Israelis could not achieve any of that, and they still try to achieve or to declare victories through media and propaganda. But now we can see loud voices coming from within the entity saying that most of their news are fake and lies. They are talking about the number of killed soldiers. They are talking about number of injured, wounded soldiers. They are, of course, fakely, and they are lessen the quantity of buildings destroyed within the entity. So now we are a clear voices coming out from the within the entity saying that their media is lying to them, and I heard that from Yair Lapid, from the opposition party. He said that go to hospitals and see how many dead and injured soldiers are inside those hospitals.
Okay. What role do you see for the international community to respond to Qasem's call for resistance and support for Gaza. We don't have much time. If you could please wrap this up in about 2 minutes.
First of all, international community, as legal international community, the international law, international institutions, we cannot wait much from them, because it seems that we have seen how the almighty Security Council couldn't put an end to the Israelis' recklessness and atrocities. However, if the international community and international law try to hold the Israelis accountable, not since October 8, since 1948, we wouldn't have reached this point. The only reasons we have resistance in the region is only because the international law, the international institutions have failed in serving justice in this region. We wouldn't have seen resistance if Israel were held accountable since the start, but we are having resistance because the international community or international law, international institutions didn't hold these Israelis accountable. So nothing. I mean, I wouldn't count on international community or I would count on the people, on the public movements, but I would never count on the governments. I would never count on hegemonic powers who never even try to hold the Israelis accountable for their atrocities. We only heard fake promises and hollow words.
Thank you very much, Isabella Zaidan, academic and political analyst, joining us live from Damascus. Mr. Ali Hamia, academic and political analyst, joining us from Beirut. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of Spotlight.
If you're interested to know about history, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune in to IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Kamala Harris has a big lead over Donald Trump among early voters in the United States. The lead is larger than the one Hillary Clinton had over Donald Trump in the 2016 election. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Telegraph has covered this story and tells us more. Kamala Harris has a big lead over Donald Trump among American voters who say they have already cast their ballots, according to opinion polls. The Democratic nominee had an advantage of 19 to 29 percentage points over her Republican rival, according to tallies by ABC News and Ipsos, New York Times and Siena College, and CNN. The lead is larger than the one Hillary Clinton had over Donald Trump in the run-up to the 2016 election, when polls showed the Democratic nominee leading with 8 to 16 percentage points. Joe Biden had a greater margin in late 2020 polls, when Democrats embraced mail voting. While Donald Trump attacked it and persuaded his supporters not to do it, polling shows that Kamala Harris has a significant advantage in swing states, where the two parties have similar levels of support and where the outcome of the election will be decided. According to polls from Marist, CNN, Fox News and USA Today, Suffolk University, Kamala Harris leads among early voters in the key battlegrounds of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Only in Nevada does any major poll indicate an early Donald Trump swing state advantage, with a CNN study showing a 6 percentage point lead. There has been Republican excitement over increased levels of early voting by their supporters, which led billionaire businessman Elon Musk to declare that Donald Trump was trending towards a crushing victory. 4 years ago, Trump was vehemently opposed to early and mail-in voting, saying it was vulnerable to fraud. This time around, Donald Trump and Republican Party officials have adapted their messaging to encourage supporters to cast their ballots before Election Day next Tuesday. Elon Musk's prediction was based on a comparison from Pennsylvania of 2024, vote-by-mail turnout against turnout levels from this point in the 2020 race, which showed registered Republicans making up 32% of the early vote compared with 21% back in 2020. Early voting data tends to favor Democrats as the party encourages its supporters to cast their ballots early, so less is left a chance on Election Day. Women are also voting early in large numbers, and Democrats, who have made reproductive rights a central campaign issue, see the female vote as key to a Kamala Harris victory. According to the University of Florida's Election Laboratory, 54% of the 60 million Americans who have already voted are women. Kamala Harris led Donald Trump by 12 percentage points among female voters in October, according to an analysis by Reuters and Ipsos. Experts warned against overinterpreting early polling data, as the subsamples of those who say they have already submitted their ballot have larger margins of error. Mail-in voting and early voting began at scale in the United States during the Civil War, but has been a significant expansion since 2000. Most states offer in-person and mail voting, though options vary. The latest opinion polls indicate that the candidates are neck and neck in the home stretch of the race. Assassination attempts, the dropping out of the incumbent, criminal convictions, and a record-breaking donation haul, the 2024 U.S. presidential election cycle is a roller coaster ride. With just a matter of days to go until Americans head to the polls on 5th of November next Tuesday, The Telegraph is tracking the race at every turn. Kamala Harris had long maintained a lead over Donald Trump after Joe Biden withdrew and endorsed her as a Democratic nominee, according to our national polling aggregates. But the space between them is vanishing with each day the election draws nearer. British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story. Donald Trump trails Kamala Harris by between 19 and 29 percentage points among those who say they've already cast their ballots, according to the latest opinion polls. Despite Donald Trump's boasts of an unprecedented lead in early voting, polling suggests that Kamala Harris is actually significantly ahead among those who have already voted, either through absentee, mail-in, or in-person ballots. Recent national polling from ABC News and Ipsos, the New York Times and Siena College, and CNN show that Kamala Harris leads Donald Trump 62% to 33%, 59% to 40%, and 61% to 36% respectively, according to analysis by the Washington Post. According to these polls, those who have already voted are nearly twice as likely to have voted for Kamala Harris, with a 24% lead among early voters. The same trend is also true across almost all of the swing states, according to surveys from CNN, Fox News, Morris Poll and USA Today's Suffolk University. The polls find that Kamala Harris is leading in early voting across Arizona between 9 and 12%, Georgia between 7 and 10%, Michigan between 26 and 39%, North Carolina between 2 and 6%, Pennsylvania between 17 and 35%, and Wisconsin between 22 and 60%. CNN's polling of those who said they've already voted has found that Donald Trump leads Kamala Harris in Nevada by 6 percentage points. Early voting records have been smashed already this election cycle, with 65 million Americans estimated to have cast their ballots already, according to the University of Florida. An estimated 65% of likely voters either have or intend to cast their ballot before Election Day next Tuesday. Excitement in the GOP camp is mounting, as opinion polls show Republicans have embraced early voting much more than in 2020, when Donald Trump dissuaded the use of mail-in ballots despite the U.S. being in the depths of the COVID pandemic. In Pennsylvania, for example, registered Republicans make up about 32% of early vote this year, a significant increase from 21% back in 2020, according to CNN. Trump has claimed that his party is in fact storming ahead in the polls among early voters. Donald Trump speaking at Henderson, Nevada, a campaign stop on Thursday, 31st of October, said, "We're leading in early voting for the first time ever. As you know, Democrats always lead in the early part, and Republicans like to go there on." Despite enhanced GOP voter turnout, Kamala Harris is expected to go into Election Day with a substantial lead, according to the latest opinion polls.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
the headlines, the Hezbollah resistance movement continues to hit Israel's military sites and settlements, striking two major bases near Haifa with drones and missiles. Israel's brutal air and artillery strikes kill more Palestinian women and children across Gaza, raising the genocidal war's death toll to about 43,300. And Iran's president blames the US for fueling global conflicts, warning that Tehran will not leave any aggression against its sovereignty and security unanswered. The Hezbollah resistance movement presses ahead with its retaliatory operations against Israel, targeting the regime's military positions deep inside the occupied territories. In one of its latest operations, the group targeted the Israeli army's Eliakim training base south of Haifa with a squadron of drones. Hezbollah also targeted a group of Israeli forces in the Metula settlement with a guided missile, killing and injuring them. The resistance group targeted the Beit Lid military base east of the occupied city of Netanya with a barrage of missiles. The headquarters of Israel's Western Brigade Command in the Yara barracks was also targeted with a drone. The movement's air defense unit forced an Israeli Hermes 900 drone to leave Lebanon's airspace over the Eklim at Tufar region. Hezbollah's missile barrages also hit for the first time the Haifa technical base, which is used to train the regime's air force technicians. Hezbollah carried out several more operations targeting Israeli soldiers in a number of settlements across the occupied territories. Israel has carried out fresh strikes in Lebanon shortly after threatening residents to leave. At least three Israeli airstrikes targeted the eastern Baalbek region, which has seen heavy raids in recent days. The regime has also issued displacement orders for the nearby town of Doris. It claims Hezbollah facilities are located nearby. Earlier, the Israeli military targeted an area near the southern city of Sidon, killing three people. Israel has intensified its military campaign in Lebanon since late September. Nearly 3,000 have been killed and over 1.2 million displaced in Lebanon since clashes broke out with Hezbollah last October over the genocide in Gaza. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent Mariam Saleh from Beirut for more details on the latest Israeli atrocities in Lebanon.
A child.